Session number 16909.
Hans Gummering 4. And the doctor was allowed 25 men off sick every day. Well, naturally, he would say, and his helpers, well, we've got 15 genuine today. That means I can have 10 more. And we were all on a rota. And it came up to the rota, and the medic came round to me. He said, Albert, your day off tomorrow. Good. And that was it. And then about an hour later, that same evening, he came racing round. Everybody who goes sick tomorrow has got to go and see the German doctor. So I went round, saw our doctor, and I said, I'm not losing my day, I'll go and see the German doctor. Well, what are you going with, he said. I said, well, you know, it's my stomach. I can't keep anything down. Everything I eat is coming back. I'm sick and I'm in pain. All right, he said, you'll get away with that. So in the morning, fully dressed, nice and clean and tidy, we marched down to the local town, into the little lazarette there, and saw the German doctor. I told him my symptoms. Right, he said, have an x-ray. So off I went and had an x-ray, and I waited there. And then he called me out, my name, and back I went. He said, you've got an ulcer. I looked at him, and he was looking at me, and I thought, who's kidding who here? I didn't have any pains in the stomach. There was nothing wrong with me, ulcer. I think he's twigged me. And he says, I'm sending you to hospital. You no more work. Oh, right. So back I goes, and then on the 17th of November 1944, I'm sent to a place called Tost, T-O-S-T, in Oberschlesia, to a hospital. And it was a converted nut house. In other words, it was a lunatic asylum that had been taken over as a POW hospital. You could open the doors on the outside, but inside, you couldn't. If you went to the toilet, you couldn't pull the chain, you had to get somebody else to do that with a key. And if you wanted to wash, you'd have to get the same person to switch the water on. And I was put up in the ulcer or stomach ward, up in the top of the building, and we weren't all that far away from Auschwitz, and we used to watch it was mainly American bombers coming over day after day, bombing the place to smithereens.
Bombing Auschwitz?
Yes, they bombed the Auschwitz, or not actually the actual, they were after the factories that were around Auschwitz, not where the chappies were. And the Germans there, they used to say to you that if there was an air raid, you could shoot off into the safety of the open air, provided that you were back in your place within an hour of the all clear going. And that's the way they used to work it. Our hospital, you could feel the roof being lifted and dropping back on every time. And in the ward where we were, there was a great big room, which in normal times was the padded cell. And it had enormous door on the front of it, and that was kept open with a scotch under it. So when we wanted to have a fag, we'd wait till the two German orderlies were in there, and we used to take it in turn walking past and just touching this scotch and knocking it out. And straight away the door used to swing, bump. And once it was shut, no matter how much noise you made inside, they couldn't hear it outside. And we used to climb up on the beds, open the windows, have a smoke, and then as soon as we was finished, all the dog ends used to be done away with, and all the ash, and then we'd come down and open the door, and we used to say to them every time, I don't know how we got away with it, but we'd get a new scotch if we were you, that it must be the vibration. And we used to get away with it. And then after a couple of weeks, we were allowed to leave the room and go down and to the other floors to see some of the other chaps. But you could only do that when you got certain, nurses, the German nurses. Some of them were decent and let you go down, others wouldn't. But by and large, that went on. And then we could hear the fighting getting closer and closer to us. And then in they came on the 20th of January, 1945. And they said they'd sorted out those that were being left there, and those would have to go. And those that had to go, we was told to pack up what you thought you could carry with you. And then at 7:30 on the 21st of January, we marched out of the hospital. And outside was 3 foot of snow.
I think that you said that the rest of your war is in your diary, which you're now donating to the SAS Museum.
Yes. Would you like to see it?
Well, later on, but if I can just ask you some questions we finish about some of the things you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about David Sterling and how you met him on numerous occasions.
Yes.
How close did you get to know him? How close were you to him?
Well, he was the officer type, but you were treated as men. He would talk to all of us about, natural, not what we was going to do. If you were going on a job, you'd be always have a meeting before and what you were doing and what we were doing then. But in normal conversation, he treated you as a man. I mean, he never spoke down to anybody. We were all treated the same. And naturally, in a unit like that, surnames and sir was out. Everybody was Tom, Dick and Harry. If you was on a job, you had to get used to the fact that if you wanted to call him, you'd call him David. He wouldn't start calling out sir or whatever, or colonel. Straight away, as you can appreciate, that it would give him away to anybody who wanted to get hold of the gaffer. And that was the type of man he was. Now, he was the man who led us, the whole of the squadron, out from Cabrit when we went up on this last job. And he led us all the way. I mean, at one time, I should say, we were about 700 miles behind the lines, which is a fair distance.
What did David Sterling look like?
Well, he was he was a gentleman. I mean, he looked a man. There was nothing, how can I say, nothing outstanding to look at. He was an ordinary man. There was no side with him, as I say. If he knew your Christian name, he would call you that. He wouldn't say soldier or anything like that. He would call you by your Christian name if he knew it. And he knew the best part of us, really. And he was genuine in the way he spoke to you. I mean, when he left us at the finish to go on to his section, I mean, the last thing he did was, cheerio, lads, all the best, and it was genuine, you know. There was nothing, how can you say, like the governor talking to you. It was as a friend, wishing you all the best, hope to see you later on. Well, of course, he got captured more or less about the same, round about the same time as us. Hey. But unfortunately, he finished up in the castle.
Called it?
Yeah.
What rank did you have in the SS?
Parachutist. PCT. That's what they called us then. And, I won't say that I didn't want to get on or anything like that, but I was satisfied in doing the job that they wanted me to do. And that was it. I carried on with it. All right, if there'd have been, if we'd have got back from this, maybe I would have been promoted. And as far as I was able to find out, I did my job quite well. I mean, the officer that I was with, he got captured, as I say, about 4 or 5 days before us. And now we are still the best of friends. I was with him and his wife. It was their golden wedding last June. I sent them a nice bouquet. And I was invited to the family gathering on that weekend, but unfortunately I couldn't go. I'd made other arrangements. But I've been there since then and spent the day with him.
So, did you enjoy your time with the SAS?
Wonderful. Really, that was the best part of my army service, with the men that I met. The job that I did, that I was trained to do, and that I could get on and do it, it was, as I've said previously, I was with men, really wonderful people, and I'm still with them. It's not the top one, is it?